Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Let's get going. Back to the phones, 888-914-9149. You can call that number. Let's see. Let's talk to James in Virginia. Good morning, James. Welcome.
Hi. How you doing?
Yes.
So I have a word for a Brian who was just on, maybe a few people ago. I was an atheist, and I didn't really leave the church for any sort of rational reason. I just left because I wanted to do what I wanted to do. And, and I came back. And the reason I came back was because one person just reached out to me and told me exactly, what Jesus had done in their life and why they were Catholic. And I said, well, thank you very much for that story. But I'm good where I am. And then she shared a video, and that video was very striking. And it changed my life. It was really just that person was open to reaching out to me and, just sharing her story. And that was really it. And not a lot of people do that. Not a lot of people reach out in love to people who are lost. I don't know where Brian is with his friend. I don't know how often he talks to him about this, but that was really just one opportunity that one person took, and no one had done that.
Well, somebody did that in your case. Praise God.
Yeah. Someone did that in my case for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. And maybe a point that you're making that other people can pay attention to is the fact that we all have opportunities to be what that person was for you. I suspect that most of us, most of the time, we neglect these opportunities because we're distracted or we're not attentive to the possibility that somebody needs encouragement or a welcome home, that kind of thing. So what you're saying is important for people to remember, that there are a lot of opportunities for grace to help other people, like in the situation you were in, if we're just more aware and we make more of an effort.
Yeah. Or if someone has a bucket of thinset and they're at a construction site and they need to get back to work.
Are you at a construction site right now? Do you have to get back to work?
That's correct. Yeah, I do. I really just wanted to make this call, and I'm really happy you took it as soon as you did. So thank you for that, Patrick.
Well, thank you. You got it, James. And welcome home. What a great day to celebrate. I promised Mary Ann before the break that I would share with her that Bible verse that I just actually found right as we were going to the break, but I didn't have time. So she wanted to know, a friend of hers wanted to know about the temple veil in the temple in Jerusalem being torn from top to bottom. Well, that's found in Matthew 27, verse 51. So to read in context, Jesus, verse 50, cried out with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him keeping watch over Jesus saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, truly, this was the Son of God. So I wanted to make good on that promise, and it's Matthew 27, verse 51, where it says the temple veil was torn in two. I had an email, kind of ties in with what we heard of a moment ago. This is from Mike, who's listening in San Antonio. And I hope, Mike, that you're listening right now. He sent me an email just a few minutes ago saying the subject is 1 hour and 45-minute wait to try and ask a question. He says, I sat for about an hour and 45 minutes waiting to talk and ask a question. Is this normal? If I did not state my question or the gentleman did not understand me, why put me on hold? This is, he says, from a frustrated listener who donated a lot of money in the last charity drive. Well, first of all, thank you. Sincere, heartfelt thanks, Mike, for supporting Relevant Radio during the pledge drive. We really appreciate it. And I want to thank you again for that. But to answer your question, it is absolutely normal to be on hold for a long time on this program. And I'm not saying that to be glib. I'm just saying it because invariably the phone lines are jammed. And we have a minimum of 12 inbound phone lines. And if you were in the studio looking at the screen, you'd see every single one of them typically is jammed up. As soon as one call ends, when that call is over and that line becomes available, immediately another call comes in. And so I try to work through as many calls as I possibly can. But please believe me, I'm not being glib when I tell you it is absolutely typical and normal for people to wait on hold for a long time. And I have people tell me all the time, and I really feel bad, but there's really not much I can do about it. People say, I call and I can never even get in. I mean, it's always a busy signal. So there's nothing about you, nothing about your question, nothing about any of those things. It's just the nature of the program. We have wall-to-wall calls. And usually you'll hear me say early in an hour, I'll say, this is the right time to call, and we can try to get you on the air more quickly. But once the show starts and things get going, it does become a bit of a traffic jam. So thank you for your patience. I hope you will call in again. And if you make mention of this email to our call screener, we'll do our best to get you on the air so you don't have to wait so long. But thank you for understanding and thank you for your patience. Let's go now to Christina in Los Angeles. Good morning, Christina.
Hi, Patrick. I have a quick question regarding First Friday and First Saturday of the month promises. Does one have to go to confession within the 8 days to receive both of the promises, or for either or?
Well,
I'm looking at different websites.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about the First Friday's devotion to the Sacred Heart and the First Saturday devotion that was given by Our Lady at Fatima, right?
Correct.
Okay, so the general rule of thumb is that you go, let's just take the First Friday's, that you go to Mass, you receive communion, and you go to confession on 9 consecutive Fridays. So if you skip one, then you haven't fulfilled the requirement to do that. So 9 consecutive first Fridays of the month. And the same would be true for the first Saturday devotion. Now, the question is for, let's say, a plenary indulgence that's attached to some other devotion. The church has, as part of its law, that you can fulfill the requirements for a plenary indulgence if you receive communion and go to confession within the octave, which means 8 days before or after. As I understand it and have read what was said by St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, or Jesus to her, in the Sacred Heart devotions, and what Our Lady said to the shepherd children in the First Saturday devotions, that is not stipulated. So the basic requirements are you go to Mass, you go to communion, go to confession on those days, consecutive days. And by doing this, you fulfill the devotion, and you can receive the graces that come from it. I'm not aware of the church saying, extending this latitude of going within 8 days before or after to these specific devotions. I'm not aware of it. If it happened, okay, I'm just not aware of it. So as far as I am aware, if you want to make these devotions in the way that they're prescribed, then you go to Mass, you receive Holy Communion, you go to confession on those days, and you've done it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. It's one of those topics that comes up from time to time, and I've done a bit of homework, and I've looked, and I know there are people who say, well, the church says 8 days before or after. It's true, but I don't know that it says it specifically about these particular devotions. So thanks, Christina. And before we go to the next phone call, and by the way, here's the phone number, 888-914-9149. Every so often, I'll encounter people, and Christina was not one of them, to be sure. but people who have a kind of what's the bare minimum I have to do in order to make this work. And
I'm just standing right here.
Well, I wasn't pointing any fingers or anything. But that's not the right attitude. So the right attitude is not, you know, what's the bare minimum I have to do or how much latitude do I have in order to make this work? I mean, if you want to be technical and, you know, the letter of the law kind of thing, all right. But I don't think that's the best way to go. The best way to go is, you know, what does the Lord want of me? What does the church say I should do? How can I fulfill in the spirit of the law, in a joyful way, something that's being asked of me? And rather than say, what's the minimum I have to do? That sort of mentality of scarcity is one way to look at it. To have the mentality of abundance. You know, maybe a different way to put this would be, if you ever met somebody who says, I have to go to Mass on Sunday, rather that you say, I get to go to Mass. I have the privilege and the opportunity of going to Mass on Sunday. And when you even just begin to change your attitude on little things like that, it can open up a whole window into greater and better things in the spiritual life. Just some food for thought.
Fact.
Let's go to Phil now in Roswell, Georgia. Good morning, Phil.
Oh, good morning. Hello.
Yes. You seem surprised that you're on the air, but you are. Welcome.
Well, yeah, I was just heard your response to the guy who sent an email about waiting an hour and a half, and so I figured I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing until
you
come
on. Well, thank you for your patience.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, we were talking a couple of callers a while back about these laws that some states are making to require priests to tell them some crime has been committed. I just think that is such a ridiculous law on the part of the government. I mean, no, never mind what happens to the church because of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are going to know that law and they're going to say, well, heck, I'm not going to go to a priest and tell him what I did. And so the use of having the priest say anything, he's not going to hear anything, so he's going to say anything. You know, and yeah. The other people, you know, if this law came in, would cause them, even innocent, you know, their sins that are not criminal crime sins, at least in the eyes of the law, would not come either. But the fact
that's
that,
true,
you know, we can use that, I think. The Catholic Church can use that to say, listen, and they are using it, we'll go to jail before we confess somebody's sins or even the fact that they showed up in our confessional.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I had to say.
Well, you said it well, and it tracks with what the church teaches. I appreciate that, Phil. And I suspect we will see more of this kind of effort on the part of secular society to force Catholic priests to do this. It's not going to happen. I mean, there may be some Judas priests who do it just because they want to avoid the penalties, but the good priests, the heroic priests, they won't do it, that's for sure. So let me, first of all, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. I'm glad you didn't have to wait an hour and 45 minutes. We do try hard not to make that happen. And actually, we do have a couple lines open now. So those of you who have called and waited and didn't get on, call now, and I can get you on. 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. So let me just share with you a few tidbits. Now, this is from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. We're looking at paragraph 1467, talking about the sacramental seal of confession. It says, given the delicacy and greatness of this ministry and the respect due to persons, the Church declares that every priest who hears confessions is bound under very severe penalties to keep absolute secrecy regarding the sins that his penitents have confessed to him. He can make no use of knowledge that confession gives him about penitents' lives. This secret, which admits of no exceptions, is called the sacramental seal, because what the penitent has made known to the priest remains sealed by the sacrament. And so that's the essence of this. It is the recognition that let me use some terminology here that you may or may not be familiar with. Well, this is called the internal forum. The internal forum is another way of saying you alone in the privacy of your own soul with God. And this is where, when the Catechism talks about the importance and the primacy of conscience, it talks about this absolute, you might think of it as like a secret garden, this inner sanctum that nobody else can invade. Only you are there in your own private thoughts, and God is there, of course. He sees everything. So in the internal forum, nobody has a right to know the internal forum unless you permit that person to know this. So in marriage, that would be an example of where the internal forum can be shared. But even there, there's not an absolute right. Your husband does not have an absolute right to know the secrets of your heart. God does. Your wife doesn't have the absolute right. Now, it doesn't. I don't mean to suggest that you can conceal things from your husband or your wife. That's not where I'm going with this. But you have a right to that privacy in the internal forum. Now, in the sacrament of confession, you are inviting that priest into the internal forum. And because he has the ministry given to him by Jesus Christ to absolve sins, the only way that he can adequately fulfill this ministry is if he knows what the sins are, and he has an opportunity for you to say, here are my sins, and express true sorrow, et cetera, et cetera. That's the role that he fulfills. And so he has no right to violate the integrity and the exclusivity of your internal forum. And this is not a topic that I think a lot of people necessarily think about, but it's important. And one of the reasons, it's not the only reason, but one of the reasons is because, as that caller alluded to, if people thought to themselves, and this in fact would be true, if the church just simply did what the state wants it to do, like, well, if somebody comes in and confesses a crime, you are obligated to report it. Nobody would go to confession. And nobody would receive the sacrament and the sacramental graces. So that's just one reason. So the church takes this very seriously. Priests are subject to severe penalties, according to the church's law, if they reveal anything in the sacrament of confession. And that would mean everything from the fact that you went to confession. They can't even say, so if somebody says, you know, if the cop pulls the priest over and says, hey, did you hear, you know, Bill's confession, Bill who lives at, you know, 2525 Mockingbird Lane. Did you hear his confession yesterday? The priest can't say yes or no. He can't say anything. And what did he tell you? Well, I can't answer that question. So it is an absolute secrecy, and it's for the benefit of the penitent. And the priest, under no circumstances whatsoever, is allowed to divulge what he hears in the sacrament of confession. So please be aware of that. And as I say, if you're interested in a dramatization of that, that movie by Alfred Hitchcock called I Confess, classic on the genre, and that'll be a movie that'll explain it to you in a vivid and dramatic way. We're going to take a break, and I'll come back to the phone calls. 888-914-9149. I'm going to move quickly. Promise you that. I don't want you to hold any longer than you have to. 888-914-9149. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Just to give you a quick glimpse into how crazy things have become. There's a new movie about Cleopatra. It's going to be starring Adele James. She's a black actress. And it's going to start streaming, I think, middle of the month. And there's this big controversy because the actress aforementioned is black, and she portrays Queen Cleopatra of Egypt. And the Egyptian government has stood up and said, you guys, Cleopatra wasn't black. Cleopatra, this according to the Egyptian government's antiquities ministry, it announced, it said, it disagrees with this movie and says Queen Cleopatra had white skin and Hellenistic characteristics. And they're in this pitched battle with Netflix over this drama documentary. As Egypt's last pharaoh, Cleopatra fights back to protect her throne, family, and legacy in this docudrama featuring reenactments and expert interviews, according to Netflix. But even before the movie is released, Queen Cleopatra is causing this controversy because the Egyptians, who I think would know, they're saying she wasn't black. She was white. And that is just really irritating, I guess, to the people involved in the movie. To ask whether someone was black or white is anachronistic. This according to Rebecca Fudo Kennedy, an associate professor of classics at Denison University in Granville, Ohio. She says to ask whether someone was black or white is anachronistic, says this professor, and it's more about modern political investments than attempting to understand antiquity on its own terms. I think she's right about that. Kenan Malik wrote in The Observer, there is nothing wrong in casting Cleopatra as black. The problem lies in the resonances that flow from that. The actress in question is no more or less authentically Cleopatra than Elizabeth Taylor was. Ancient commentary on Cleopatra reveals little interest in discussing her identity in the way that the modern world obsessively does. The article points out Cleopatra belonged to the Macedonian Lagides dynasty, descended from Ptolemy, one of the generals of Alexander the Great. She was not black. And so the fact that this is creating a controversy, I find interesting in itself because, you know, can't we just accept history for what it is? This reminds me, and I'll leave it at that, but, you know, invariably every Christmas or even Easter for that matter, if I post, as I do every year on Twitter, I'll post a picture of Mary and Jesus, like Mary holding baby Jesus. And invariably, the kooks come out of the woodwork and say, well, Jesus wasn't white, and Jesus wasn't Northern European, and Jesus didn't have fair skin, and Jesus didn't have blue. Oh my gosh, can you just celebrate the reason for the season? Do you have to descend into these ridiculous politics of race and how we depict people? Is there anything wrong with, in China, artistic renditions of Mary and Jesus showing them as Chinese? No, nothing wrong with that. Is there anything wrong with, in Africa, Black Jesus or Black Mary, if that's the way that they're portrayed to the people there? Is there anything wrong with that? No. So it's just a point of exasperation. And I think not just for me, but for others as well, that, you know, just let history be what it is. Let's tell the truth as best we know it anyway. And just don't get so uptight and hung up over people representing Jesus and Mary and others in ways that are meaningful to different cultures. Just let it be what it is. I'll leave it at that. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Benito now in Vista, California. Hello, Benito.
No.
Hey, Benito, you are on the air, sir. Welcome. Are you with me?
Yes, I'm here. Oh.
Okay, right. I wasn't sure. It was touch and go for a minute there. Yes. Please proceed, sir.
Okay. Question is, went to Mass a couple Sundays ago, and there was a priest and three deacons. One deacon is semi retired. But the altar server was the one doing the, I don't want to say ashes, the scent, gosh, I just had that word.
Incense?
You know, was it? Incense, yes.
Okay.
Is that proper?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you say doing the incense, do you mean incensing the altar at the beginning of Mass, or do you mean when he incenses the priest and then he comes in front of the congregation and incenses the congregation?
The congregation.
Is that what you mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's entirely proper.
Oh, okay. All right. I just found it kind of odd. You know, you had some deacons up there.
Yeah, well, the deacons have a certain role that they fulfill at the altar in the sanctuary. And it's not that a deacon couldn't do that, but typically that's not something the deacon would do. That would be the altar server. Glad I could clear that up. Thank you, Benito. Let's go now to Darlene in Mesa, Arizona. Hi, Darlene.
Hi, Patrick. I just had a question about when, after we receive communion, what is the prayer that's really appropriate to say? Because I usually say like the Anima Christi, and I'm also very thankful, but what else is there?
You certainly could say any prayer you want. It could be an extemporaneous prayer from your heart. You could say a memorized prayer like the Anima Christi, which is very beautiful. If you want some suggestions, one that I say every time, and I say this many times throughout that part of the Mass, is the prayer that was given by the angel to the shepherd children in Fatima just before the apparitions of Our Lady. An angel appeared to them a time or two and taught them the prayer. God, now that I want to say it, I can't remember it. I believe in you, I hope in you, and I adore you, and I love you. I beg pardon for all those who do not believe, do not hope, do not adore, and do not love you. And so that's an act of reparation, but it's also an act of gratitude and praise to the Lord. So that's a prayer that I pray personally. I also make an intention every time I receive Holy Communion. I ask that the Lord would accept this Holy Communion in reparation for all the sins that I have committed in my lifetime and all the sins that I have caused other people to commit. So that's always a prayer intention of mine. I really do like the Lamb of God prayer, and I like the Latin version of it. So, you know, O Lord, I am not worthy that thou should enter under my roof, but only say the word and my soul shall be healed. And the Latin phrase of that is Domine non sum dignus ut in tres subtectum meum, sed tantum dic verbo et sanabitur anima mea. That's what I learned as a kid. And so for me, that's a very meaningful thing to pray. But you can say anything you want, any prayers that come to your heart that help you make a better act of thanksgiving. You're entirely free to do anything like that.
Okay. Yeah, I just kind of wondered sometimes. I was like, I wonder what else I could pray.
We have some really good prayers in the Relevant Radio app. If you go in the upper right-hand corner, there are before and after communion, and those are very helpful.
Okay. Thank you. I had one more, if you don't mind, real quick.
Sure.
Okay. Sometimes I'll go into, if I miss the English Mass, I'll go into the Spanish Mass. Sometimes during when the priest holds up the bread for the transubstantiation thing, but the parishioners say something under the bread, under their breath. What do they say? I mean, I don't really understand what they're saying.
What does the priest say?
No, the parishioners, like in a Spanish Mass, they'll say something right when he's holding the bread up.
Oh, that I don't know. And it's probably just whatever that person feels moves to do. I know some people, they say the words of St. Thomas the Apostle, my Lord and my God. That's a beautiful thing. It can be anything that comes to your heart and mind. Whatever you find helps you make the most out of receiving Holy Communion, do that. And if you're not sure, then go to the Relevant Radio app. And for those who don't have the Relevant Radio app, once you download it, you'll see in the upper right-hand corner where it says pray. Just click on that. And it has basic prayers, prayers before Mass, prayers after Mass. There's prayers for communion, prayers of adoration. They're just lots and lots of resources there, and that'll give you some suggestions as well, Darlene. Thank you. We'll go now to Gerardo in Corona, California. Good morning, Gerardo.
Good morning. My question, Patrick, is anger that grave of a sin, like serious raging anger?
Yeah. One of the seven deadly sins is the sin of wrath. And that's a subset of the sin of pride, which is the chief of the deadly sins. So, yes, there is no question that anger in that form is a very serious sin, no doubt about it. Now, anger itself is not always sinful, and St. Thomas, in his treatise on the virtues, he has a section just on anger. and whether or not anger is always a sin, and when it is a sin, is it always a serious sin? And he says it often is a serious sin, and he invokes the sin of wrath as an example. But he says there is a certain kind of anger that is necessary and even meritorious if your anger is in the form of, take for example, you see sin in your own life, and it stirs you to anger, to want to combat that sin. That's a good form of anger. If you see an injustice taking place and you have some way to try to help somebody or defend somebody, and it stirs you to anger because of what's happening to that person, widows and orphans, for example, things like that, unborn children, to use another example, that kind of anger, we also call it righteous indignation, is a good form of anger. But we have to be careful it doesn't become corrupted and become vindictive. So you can be indignant about an unjust situation, and that anger will stir you to do something good. But when it crosses the line into retribution and vindictiveness, that's when it becomes sinful. And St. Thomas outlines all this in greater detail.
Okay, because unfortunately, I make mistakes. And mistakes do anger my wife. And sometimes it's into a person like I don't recognize. It's like, it just really boils up, and I'm in fear. I don't know.
You mean like fear is going to strike you, or what do you mean?
Yeah, throw things, something by me.
Yeah, well, sounds like she needs an anger management class, because it's like anything else, Gerardo. Anger, lust, gluttony, pride. I mean, if you just go down the list of the sins, if you allow that sin to run away with you, you're in big trouble, because not only are you committing a sin, but you're also opening yourself up to who knows what other sins you might commit. So having self-mastery is part of growing in virtue. And self-mastery, I'll tell you, and I'm not a saint, not yet anyway. I'm trying to get there, but I'm not there yet. But self-mastery is very difficult. But the thing is, the more you practice it, the easier it gets. So in the case of your wife, if her predominant fault is wrath.
Could it be said that because of my doing, getting my wife that angry, could she possibly go to hell for that?
Well, she wouldn't go to hell for what you did. She could go to hell, sure, if she dies in the state of mortal sin. And if the mortal, it doesn't really matter what the mortal sin is, but let's just say it's wrath. Sure, people can go to hell for that, but she would not, in other words, you would not be sending her to hell. You might provoke her to that sin, and if you know that she has a special weakness in that area and you intentionally provoke her, well, that could wind up being a sin of your own, but she wouldn't go to hell because of you. The only people who go to hell are the people who send themselves there by their free will choice to rebel against God. Is that what you're driving
at? I have my errors and my mistakes, and I don't want to cause her any harm. And Lord knows, growing up, we've kind of a cradle life, and that did not really help me mature to where I'm supposed to be. And I know that causes tension in her. And I do recognize it, and I'm working on it, but I just don't want to be the cause or fault of her damning herself.
You would not be. You would not be the cause of her doing that. The only person who goes to hell is the person who sends himself there. So I guess I'm repeating myself, but I think you need to make a distinction between, in your marriage, if you know that your wife is prone to a certain kind of sin, don't do something to egg her on if you can avoid it. Now, if she's unreasonable and this is just a serious personality flaw and a sin that anything you do, even if it's benign, makes her angry and she falls into that sin, well, that's not your fault. You know, if let's say you don't put the toilet seat down, or you don't, you know, clean up your food or dishes or something, there's little things that you could do, and you know, well, if I don't do this, she's going to fly off the handle. Well, then the right thing to do is to do it. you know, to try to help her not fall into that sin. But if you just walk in the house and say, hello, honey, and that makes her mad and she flies off the handle, well, you're not at fault for anything. That's her problem. So you try to help as best you can, but you're not responsible for her sins, ultimately. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yes. I appreciate your advice, Patrick. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, you know, do you think she would read a book if you gave her a book as a gift?
Maybe. Yes.
Try this. Give her a book called My Daily Bread by Father Anthony Paone. It's a little book. It's like the size of a pack of cigarettes. But there are no harmful side effects. In fact, if anything, this is going to be a really good book for her. Just little meditations on things like patience and suffering and things like that. And she could start reading her way through that. And it's similar to another book. If you wanted to get her this other book, it's called Imitation of Christ, The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A'Kempis. And those would be little helps for her in the middle of her day. If she gets in the habit of reading these things, it's going to speak to her about those kind of issues. And while you're at it, get a copy for yourself. And maybe the two of you read this book and you'll learn how to help each other. I hope that helps. Anger is a pernicious problem that most people deal with at one point or another. So we can help each other. I'll be back with more, not a whole lot more, but whatever's left of the program, I'll be back with that right after this. Today, we'd like to thank Priscilla, who's listening in California, for donating her Pontiac Firebird. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Uno, dos, tres, cuatro tacos. Don't forget the rice and beans on the plato. I like to eat, homie, yo no estoy flaco. Yeah, I'm chubby, pero I'm still guapo. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro.
Patrick Madrid is on
Taco Tuesday.
Coast to coast on Relevant Radio.
Taco Tuesday's my favorite day.
That's right.
I'm all away. Better, I don't care, homie, let them hate. I'm just trying to eat another plate.
All right. I love the song, but we have work to do. Let's go to Michaela now in Wausau, Wisconsin. Hi, Michaela.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
I had a question going back to the seal of confession. And I was at an adult catechism, and the priest was explaining that more recently, different sins like the sin of abortion or have been like the ability to absolve that has gone from the Pope to the bishop to priest. But some sins can only be absolved by the bishop and the Pope. How does that work if like a woman, or I guess not anymore for abortion, but like for sins that can only be absolved by the Pope, how does that sin go from you to the priest to the Pope? Like, how does that system?
I think what we're dealing with here is there are two categories here. One would be the sacrament of confession, also known as reconciliation. And the priest does have the priest who has the faculties in his diocese to hear confession, meaning that his bishop has granted him the authority to hear confessions. He can absolve any sin that you bring to him. But I think what you're thinking of is a canonical penalty like excommunication that is in some cases reserved to the bishop, or it could even be reserved to the Holy See. It could be reserved to the Pope himself. So in that case, you're dealing with two separate issues. So a common example would be the sin of abortion, which is also a canonical crime. So the sin and the absolution for sin is taken care of in the sacrament, but the lifting of the excommunication is something that's juridical. That's a legal issue. Now, most of the time, outside of a sin like that, the priest, when he grants absolution, it's all said and done. In the case where there's a canonical crime involved, like procuring an abortion, as you were alluding to, it's very common nowadays. In fact, I would say it's probably the norm, as I understand it, that the bishops have delegated the authority to the priests to lift the excommunication. And so they do that as a matter of course when they're hearing the confession of the woman or the abortion doctor or the, you know, the boyfriend or the husband or whoever pushed the woman into getting an abortion. That canonical crime would apply in their case as well. So the excommunication is lifted there. There are some unique kinds of crimes where it is reserved to the Holy See, but I think that would be something like, and I'd have to go back and consult, you know, the church's canon law to make sure I'm really clear on what the examples are. But I think it would be like something, let's say, if you beat up a priest, if you physically struck or harmed a priest, that is, there's a canonical crime there. So there would be a canonical penalty like excommunication that would be associated with it. Let's say it's a priest who violates the seal of confession, knowingly, willingly violates the seal of confession. That's a canonical crime. So he could go to confession and be absolved of his sins, but the excommunication would still apply, and that would have to be lifted by the bishop or, in some cases, by the pope. Is that what you're referring to? Does that clarify it for you a little bit more?
Yes, it definitely does, because when he was describing it, he was like, oh, we're not. And then you would write a letter to the bishop, and I was like, before absolution could be given. And then he was talking about the seal of confession, and it just seemed like the lines were blurred. Like,
yeah,
if you are a bishop, you're in on this confession, but like, I know that's not right either. So I'm
well, just, here's what yeah, would happen in a case like that. So the priest is obliged by the seal of confession, so he's not allowed to say anything, but you certainly are. You can say anything you want to. So if the priest advises you and says, well, this sin that you committed, that you've gone to confession for, has attached to it a penalty because it's also a canonical crime, and here's what you need to do to have the excommunication lifted. 99 times out of 100, the priest himself will be able to do that because the bishop has given him, has delegated that authority. But in those really unusual and rare circumstances, then you would write a petition to the bishop. You know, that it would be that kind of thing. A canon lawyer could give you specific advice, but that's very unusual. It's not the kind of thing that the average person ever has to deal with.
Okay. Thank you very much for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Happy to help. Thank you, Michaela. Let's go now to Jennifer in Austin. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Patrick. My question is about the miraculous medal.
Yeah.
I wear one on a charm bracelet, but it's my understanding when the Virgin Mary appeared to St. Catherine of Labor, Mary told her it should be worn around the neck. So is it appropriate for me to wear it as a charm on my bracelet?
Yeah, it's not inappropriate. I'll put it that way. When Our Lady told this to St. Catherine Laboure, when she showed her the miraculous medal and told her that she should make this known to people, you're right. She did say that when somebody wears it, and the wording, as I recall, is especially if you wear it around your neck, that this has the effect of reminding you and other people of your devotion to Jesus and Mary, and that many great graces will accrue from it. It's not a good luck charm. It's not a talisman or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But the wearing of the medal around the neck, in my view, would be something akin to you wear your wedding ring on your finger. You don't have to. I mean, I suppose you could wear your wedding ring on a chain around your neck, but it's most appropriate to wear your wedding ring on your finger so that people will see it. And so I think it's in that same kind of spirit that we're told that if you wear the miraculous medal around your neck, that's the ideal. But it's not inappropriate if you had it on a charm bracelet, or even if, let's say, you had it pinned to your clothing, for example. Some people do that for whatever reason. Those are fine also, but to fulfill what's considered ideal, it would be to wear the chain around your neck. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, no.
Or wear the medal around your neck, rather. Book that gets into a lot of these things. It's called The Miraculous Medal, Stories, Prayers, and Devotions by Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. It's a really good book, and she covers a lot of these kinds of questions.
Great. Well, thank you. That was great. Thanks for the information.
Happy to help, and I'm glad to know that you wear the Miraculous Medal. One of the things, by the way, everybody, that Our Lady mentioned to St. Catherine Laboure when she gave her this devotion is she said that there are many graces waiting for people, especially graces of conversion, hardened sinners, atheists, people who are just in many ways far away from God, and that the graces that the Lord wants to establish in the lives of these people are very powerful. So I, for my part, I've worn a miraculous medal around my neck for most of my life, and I think it's a wonderful devotion that everybody, you don't even have to be Catholic to wear the miraculous medal as a sign of your asking Mary to pray for you. And we'll get a link posted to that book by Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle. Again, the book is called The Miraculous Medal, Stories, Prayers, and Devotions. Now we're going to go to Sarah in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I had a question about consecration to St. Joseph. A couple of years ago, okay, I completed the consecration to St. Joseph with the video, the YouTube videos from Father Calloway, and I was curious if you could recommend sort of a similar video series for consecration to Mary.
Well, Father, in fact, you just said his name, and his name just flew out of my head. Father, what was his name again?
Father Calloway.
That's right.
Father Calloway.
Right. Yeah, he wrote, prior to the book on St. Joseph, he wrote 33 Days to Morning Glory, if I'm not mistaken. I think he's the author. And that is about Mary and consecration. So although I have not seen any videos by him or about this devotion, I'm certain that they're out there in abundance. If you just did a little bit of Googling or searching, let's say, on YouTube, you're going to find them. In that book, 33 Days to Morning Glory, if you haven't read that one, that's the first one that came out in that genre. The one on St. Joseph came out more recently.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the time.
You are welcome. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for listening. Let's go now to Dave in Dallas. Good morning, Dave.
Hi, Patrick. A question on plenary indulgences and how homebound people can obtain them for their friends in purgatory.
Yes.
I cannot go to Mass, and I cannot go to confession. I do watch the Mass on TV every day. My wife is an extraordinary minister of the Eucharist. She brings me the Eucharist most days. And in order to go to confession, I've had the priest come here, but that's a burden on them.
Sounds like you have the radio on in the background, Dave, because I can hear the show in the background.
Oh,
can you turn that off,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, that's actually my other phone.
Yeah, let's turn that off first, okay?
Okay.
Father Calloway?
Right. Yeah, he wrote.
If I could figure out how to do it.
Yeah, that would be key.
Yeah.
Just turn the whole thing off. Just press the off button.
Yeah, I think I did it. Can you hear it now?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So anyway,
I have the solution to you, for you, Dave. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to encourage you to order a book. And if you're homebound and you can't get to a local Catholic bookstore, you can order it online. You can order it on Amazon. And the book is called The Handbook of Indulgences.
Okay.
The Handbook of Indulgences, Norms and Grants. And this book will give you the whys and wherefore for all of the major indulgences, or I should say indulgenced prayers and activities that you can receive an indulgence for without ever having to leave your home. And so there are many of them available to you. So, for example, if you were to pray the rosary with a group, and the group could just be two people, you and your wife or a third person or more even, you can receive a plenary indulgence when you pray the rosary as a group and you offer the prayers for the intention of the Pope. That will grant you a plenary indulgence. And for each of these different plenary indulgences, it includes what are the requirements. In some cases, Mass and confession are necessary, but not in all cases. Some indulgence actions can grant you a plenary indulgence. Some can grant you a partial indulgence. And so all of these different things, the Litany of the Saints, the Canticle of Mary, the Memorare prayer, reciting Psalm 51, novenas, it goes through all of these different things and it tells you what kind of indulgence you can receive. So it's really indispensable for you and your situation, Dave. I think you'll find it very helpful.
Handbook of Indulgences.
Right. And it's published by the Catholic Book Publishing Company.
Okay.
You want that particular edition. It's real good.
Okay.
Real good, Dave. Real good.
So when I watch the Mass here at home and my wife brings me the Eucharist, does that fulfill that part of the...
Well, not the Mass part. Unfortunately, no, because watching Mass on television does not suffice or doesn't equate with actually attending Mass. But God knows that you're not able to, so it's not like you're doing something problematic. You're doing the best you can. Receiving Holy Communion, yes, that certainly would suffice to for whatever is required to receive Holy Communion. But you do the best you can under the circumstances. I hope that helps, Dave. Thank you. Quickly, Drew in Minneapolis, I know you've been waiting. I hope I can get to your question quickly. What is it?
Question is wife grew up and I grew up in a parish that all are invited to communion, no matter where you are in your journey, Archdiocese, Minneapolis, St. Paul. She feels that that's appropriate and I don't. And she's trying to support me by going to Catholic Church, but sometimes I feel I'm egging her on by having her do that.
And she's not Catholic? Is that what's going on?
Oh, she's totally Catholic. Totally okay. Catholic. Grew up Archdiocese. Married in Catholic Church. Kids are raised in Catholic Church.
Okay, and let me jump in because we're almost out of time. What I can tell you is the Church is really clear that to be properly disposed to receive Holy Communion, you have to be a Catholic, practicing Catholic, and you have to be unaware of any serious sin on your soul. And the Church is really clear that if you are not in those categories, you should not receive Holy Communion. So I would just simply stick with what the Bible says. You can read about that, the second half of 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Read that second half of the chapter. It tells you there. And also the Catechism. I would stick with that because that's the gospel. Thank you, Drew. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.